The following is an encore episode of Convergence with Michelle McAloon and Ellen Taylor. On this episode, Michelle and Ellen talk about digital currency. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Convergence, a program that we dive into faith and culture and get shocked and surprised, but we move forward. Joining me as usual is my co-host, Michelle McAloon. How are you today, Michelle?
I'm doing fine, Ellen. How are you,
my dear? Oh, doing good. For those listening on the podcast, we are recording this. We're kind of wrapping up the end of the year here. There's a lot of topics we kind of skipped over because it just felt like too much in 2022. But there's an important issue, I think, that's going to be with us for some time. And before we end season three here of Convergence, I wanted to take a little time to dive into it with you. And that is the digital society that we are all engaged in. And I wanted to bring it up because I saw a great article in MercatorNet.net, which is, are we sleepwalking towards a digital society? Everybody's shuffling there and nobody is talking about it. And it got me thinking, Michelle. We are in awe and grateful for a lot of the technology that is available to us these days in communicating with each other over long distances, of having information at the tip of our fingers, of all the ways it makes life easier. But it also has an intrusive element that can be used by people of nefarious means. And I thought we'd dive into that because this article in MercatorNet kind of says, are we asking the right questions? And I'm not quite sure we are.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think that the United States is going to be the one to stop the intrusive invasion of money, finance, and digitalization. We have a sense of private property that is probably the most mature in the world. Mm-hmm. And we protect that, and our Constitution protects it, and our court system and our legal and tax system protects that tooth and nail. We just had actually a court case on Monday, a Supreme Court case on this very, it was on proprietorship. Mm-hmm. If someone owns a piece of property or someone owns a business, do they have to provide a service? So it all kind of comes together, but it's the United States that will lead will advance the cause for maintaining privacy of the individual. I can tell you what happened in Europe during COVID with the COVID vaccines and the COVID passports. Mm-hmm. People rebelled against it. People won't do it. They're not. And matter of fact, the German government has not reintroduced it to it. And interesting enough, the European Union has some of the strictest privacy protocols around medical, mm-hmm. Even more so than in the United States. So I think, yes, we probably have the technology to do this, to control people's spending, control people's money, but I think you do not have the will to do this, especially in the United States. And the United States will lead the way in this.
I sure hope you're right there. And I do agree with you. And I think that was the point that really brings this moving much quicker into the population than before. And that was COVID, because we slowly had been building towards these tracking systems, so to speak. And some places saw this as an opportunity to track their citizens' movements in regards to COVID so they could track COVID. And you're right, there was a lot of pushback from the populations on this, because there was even talk, Michelle, when this was first rolled out, the talk of the COVID passport, so you'd have some sort of passport that's got your medical history on it, on what you can and can't do. And then there were those that were ever gleeful that wanted to tie in the central bank digital currency, which they call CBDC. So digital currency to tie in. So it's all wrapped in one convenient place for you. And what they found was there was a lot of pushback on this, because it was becoming obvious to some people that have concerns about the overreach of governments or institutions that this was going a bit too far. In my view, they had to pull it back because it was not getting the reception they were hoping for. But I also kind of feel that just figuring out how to regroup and come forward again on another day. And I think that while we're in this pause period, so to speak, that are we as a culture asking the questions? Are we being led somewhere without having the public debate that this needs to have? And I think that's where we're lost, because these kinds of things were always debated in the public square, big issues in countries, you know, throughout the 19th and 20th centuries as things rolled out. And because it's so useful, we've kind of passed by the debate on, is it good? And that's what we need to be having.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I don't think people will debate whether it's good. Mm-hmm. I think people will debate, is it a violation of my privacy? That's where the United States is on this. We're not so much about the common good. We're not so much, but we are about how will this interfere with me being able to maintain my privacy, make money, own property. That's where we are. And I know they talk about like putting carbon footprint, and mm-hmm. nobody believes that. Nobody believes in the carbon stuff except for corporations, right? I mean, most individuals could care less about carbon usage, right?
Yeah, yeah, because we're not flying on our private planes.
We don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't care. We don't care.
But that's, that is being imposed on a population, not just the United States, without caring.
And, yeah. You know, but you know what? They can impose all they want, but on the individual level, do you see anybody changing their behavior because they're using too many carbon emissions or they're doing too much carbon? Maybe they'll buy an electric car, but that electric car they buy because it's cheaper to operate in the long run. There's very, very few people that are buying electric cars because they might say, yeah, it's environmentally, but and those are probably the very, very wealthy. But your average person, they're going to invest in an electric car if it's going to return their dollar quicker. And that's the way, I mean, we're business. United States is about business and about personal business.
Well, I guess from the other component of it, the questions, and I think you're right, from a standpoint of asking these questions in the public square, which would be politics and all of that, is will people comply and is it a benefit to them? But I think there comes to this other side that we talk about, faith and culture, the faith side. What does this do to human dignity, to the person that is being tracked? As you said, we're resistant to it in the Western democracies to some extent, though we have it. But I think the news out of China the last couple weeks has been with these COVID lockdowns that are going on for what is still left of the COVID-19 on millions and millions of people in the population. And you saw all kinds of videos where they are using this technology to track their citizens, to punish their citizens. And basically, when you want to say players in the arena using it for nefarious means, I mean, you got to look to what the Chinese Communist Party is using this technology for on their own people.
Anytime there's an overreach of government, you have people revolt. You're looking at Iran right now. You're looking at China. I mean, anytime that government tries to exceed the individual. Now, sometimes it happens sooner than later. Sometimes it happens tragically. Sometimes it happens peacefully. But anytime you see where the government is trying to overreach, that you see people revolt. Today in Germany, it was announced. There's not a lot of details coming out, but there was supposedly 3,000 police arrested 19 people who were planning on overthrowing the German government. And it all began with the COVID restrictions. And of course, they claim it's extreme right. I'm not even sure what extreme right means anymore. But again, if you see people being forced to do something that they don't want to do, they revolt. They absolutely revolt.
Well, and that's where it'll be interesting to see what happens to the story in Germany, because the heavy hand of the government has to come down, and they have to be kind of carve out the right position under law when you come down on populations, because the perception will be, as you said, they could have 3,000 people that were revolting, and you government comes down too heavy, doesn't have a proper, I guess, information on what these people did. And the next thing you know, you got 30,000 people that are revolting against the government. And then that gets crushed, and then you got 300,000 people. So I think the government, if they're going to do these things, they have to do it within the law, and the law has to be followed. And I think that is also the frustration, is that the laws have been perceived to be only for some people and not for others. Some get away with it. I use the example. It's not really a law, but it's an example. You talk about carbon footprints and the people that are lecturing us, you know, you must use less carbon footprints. And they all get on their planes and fly to Davos, Switzerland, for a forum on climate change and the carbon they created. So it becomes, to the average everyday person, like, well, if that really is a law or something you want us to follow, you're not following it yourself. So I think that's where the government better have solid information on people that they want are going to arrest on whatever, you know, overthrow of the government. What was that? Was that an email sent? Was that a text message to a friend? Hey, I'm tired of this crazy government ruling. You don't know what it is. And the thing is, I think too, unless you have clear law laying out what is allowed and not allowed, which we do in the U.S. Our Bill of Rights and Constitution, free speech covers a lot of ground. So does that same hold true in the German society, or it probably looks very different in the Chinese society too?
Right. No, it's, you know what, the United States is the leader in the world in this, in privacy and protections, and they will take our cue. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you they will do. You know what? There would have been no COVID-19 without U.S. involvement in it, mm-hmm. without the U.S. scare. There just wouldn't have been.
Right.
There wouldn't be. So they take our lead. I believe our U.S. Constitution is strong enough, and the rights of the individual are so ensconced. And again, I have to refer to this case on Monday, the website maker, the Christian website maker.
Yeah. But that's interesting, because that was just oral arguments, but we're getting a peek at what the Supreme Court might rule on come next June. I'm sure we can do an episode on it too, because the leaning is you can't compel something to a citizen.
No,
to do
you can't
something
compel,
against
and that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You can't compel people to comply. Mm-hmm. You really can't. You've got to you can motivate, but especially with something as draconian as this, you may be able to do it through taxation. You might be able to do it through, but in the United States, we've got private business law. That's what is our business law is the best in the world, mm-hmm. as far as for upholding the individual in business. So, I mean, and again, it's still heavy-handed government, but we just don't put up with it, man.
Well,
and we won't.
But here's the thing. I think certain players will try to push this.
Sure.
And the thing is, this website designer in Colorado has had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyer's fees and a disruption of their life and their business because of this. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be the person that's made an example of that. You got to go out and fight tooth and nail saying, I will not be compelled to say that. I mean, they're taking one for the team, basically, of free speech. But it seems at some point, too, so we read about different cases and we're like, that seems so frivolous, or that seems obvious. Why is that even moving forward? And so I think that's the frustration. Like, how could you even just call a different web designer? Plenty of people that want to do your website. Plenty of people that want to bake your cake.
Sure. And I'm sure it was set up. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a setup. And I'm sure she has a lot of legal aid funding going towards her. So I think it is really good. I think it's, you know, it's a great, great test case. It'll be interesting how the judges rule on it. It looks like the judges will rule that you cannot compel someone to do something, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, you just can't do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, especially in the creative arts. So, you know what, do we have the technology to do this is possible? Yeah, but we also have human will. And mm-hmm. human will is still a very valuable measure of who we are and how we are. And that human will is stronger than technology. And human will can't be controlled by technology.
And that's where you're going to find the pushback, because our human will is kind of unmovable sometimes. I will not do that. I think where it will become a challenge is certain people or governments, let's say, will take a half step back. We're not compelling you to do anything. But if you want to get to work, you need to have this sort of X number of energy score on your phone or your app or whatever, because that's what you need to achieve to get on this bus, to put gas in your car. So third party companies or participants will kind of use institutions to do or to push forward some of these things. And I think that that's where we have to really be mindful of too, because that's the slippery slope, if you talk about that, or the slow inclusion of these types of modified or trying to control people's will. I think that's right. What we have to be mindful of.
Yeah, and I think you have to, again, it depends on what legal system you're in. And it would be interesting, because every legal system is discrete. So what would that look like in the United States versus what would that look like in Europe? Mm-hmm. And when you say Europe, from country to country, or if they're going to do it through the EU. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's all rosy, but I don't think it's all dire either. Because again, there is just the human will to either do something or not do something can be pretty implacable at times.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm wondering, Michelle, when we talk about digital currencies and, you know, what was the vaccine passport, but that'll morph into something else because that didn't go through the first time. They got too much. It was like the trial balloon went up and they said no. How much... there's been a lot of stories in the news on crypto and digital currencies in that sphere. And
that hasn't been successful.
I know, which is really interesting, because I tell you, Michelle, I've had crypto explained to me. This is what I tell people, explain to me like I'm a 5-year-old, because it is a very, it's got a lot of layers to it. And here's what I always want to know. Is it real? Is it real? How does it function? Is it, because it seems a lot of it, and we've seen the news come out about the demise of the cryptocurrency, but apparently nobody's been arrested yet on that. So I guess ripping off people for millions and billions of dollars is still okay. But how is that? Because as we move into more digital spheres, because it's easy. It's easy to Venmo somebody a payment. It's easy to send your bills out. I don't have to write the checks and put the stamps on. We've welcomed the convenience, but do we really understand? I feel like we acquiesce a little control on that.
Well, we already have digital currency, mm-hmm. you know, and it's called a credit card, right? Yeah. Or it's called, you know, Venmo or PayPal.
Right. And those are at the most basic levels. Yes.
Right. And whatever you want to call it. I still think exchange for services and goods, that primary, you know, I do this, you give me that, is still such a is such a part of how we understand business and how we understand commerce and how we understand private property. Governments are going to try to get as much control as possible. That's what a government is supposed to do, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's what governments, I mean, if they get a taste of power, they want to try to control as much as they can. And it's individuals who fight against that control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, it's there's no single answer here. I think you'll see some places where digital currency may have an uptick, you'll also see where it's never going to enter into either.
Yeah. And I think, you know, places like China that really are pushing for it because they are more of authoritarian, top-down kind of government, they're going to be the places, I think, where you try to see it put throughout all levels of society. But, you know, the corner market where you're going to buy corn, here's 10 bucks, I'll take a half a bushel or whatever. You know, that kind of currency is still going to work in that. So I think very different around the world on where you are and what you are buying and selling.
And watch China now. China's a mess right now. And people think China is so powerful. And so do you realize today Apple announced that they're pulling out of China?
Well, not all, but they do realize they need to move a portion of their manufacturing out because out of China.
That's just the beginning. It is absolutely just the beginning. So China has a horrible demographic problem. They've got financially, they're not doing well right now. So they, and I think this latest even concession to COVID is not a sign of strength, but actually a sign of weakness. That they understand that they're not impervious.
No, but China's the kind that will take a half step back in order to make a more measured step forward again. I don't think that they're anything we take our eye off of. I think China has been playing the long game for a while. I think they've got, when you have an authoritarian type of society from the government to the people that are used to accepting authoritarian rules, that they see these issues, but they're not done playing the game. So we are going to have to keep an eye on China because China's not like us in our thinking. And I know you and I have had that conversation about different cultures. They may look like us, but they're not like us, you know, in how people think and societies think. And they may take a half step back and realize, okay, we need to let up here because we're going to lose our manufacturing. But they know how to play the long game too.
You know what? We live in a dangerous world.
Yep.
We have to watch all of our enemies. Mm-hmm. China's also not 10 feet tall either. They are.
But they're pretty good at thievery and copying and all of the people that I've known in the tech business. That has been the biggest thing since the 90s and probably before that.
Right.
Was the theft of technology and intellectual rights from the West that poured out of our country when all of this tech was being developed in the 80s and the 90s. And we were probably unaware of it at that time, but they use that to their detriment. So when I talk about long game, that's the kind of stuff that they're doing as well.
Yeah, the long game. But you know what? We got smarter. We understand. We're shutting down a lot of that stuff, a lot of those programs where they were allowed to come over and do that kind of stuff. A lot of that is being shut down wholesale right now. I think you're seeing, I do. They are an enemy. They're not an implacable enemy. They're not a 10-foot tall enemy. They're just an enemy. And they're big. And that we have to pay attention to the same thing with the way we look at Russia, the same way we look at Iran and the other North Korea, all of our other friendlies out there. That
our buddies
see them in the context that they are, because they have manifest weaknesses in their societies. And we have seen that now with Iran. We're seeing that with China. You know, we're seeing it in North Korea, where we're getting reports of them rebelling. So, you know what? Again, that human will to not be controlled is, I believe, stronger than technology and authority.
Well,
always has been.
I pray that you're half glass full comes to fruition, because this world really needs, I think, its populations. I mean, nobody's looking for violence. Nobody's looking for war. But we are looking for people in their humanity to be respected and recognized and to not be, you know, basically plowed over. They're interchangeable. What does it matter if there's you over here or you over there, as they might say in China, get me another guy in the factory line. I think the challenge is going to be, well, the U.S. has its own weaknesses, and we talked about the other ones, but we've got a lot of weaknesses that we need to address in order so we don't fall victim to some of these issues as well.
And we do. And we have we do have weaknesses, but we also, I think we underappreciate our strength a lot of the time. Again, the court case on Monday, the Supreme Court case on Monday, no other society in the world would have that kind of discussion. And we were able to have that sort of discussion. And now it's a national discussion. I mean, blah, 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 that we love to talk Americans, blah, 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 blah. We'll talk about it for 6 months and who knows what the outcome of it will be, but other things will spin off from it. So we have, and every country has tremendous strengths and tremendous weaknesses. I think when you look at the media today, they just want to concentrate on the weaknesses. I really, really urge people to also look at where we are strong and that where things do work in our society, and they do work. Mm-hmm. We just had another contentious election yesterday, no violence, right? We had 50 state elections, no violence. We had
and that's better than a lot of countries. That is good, though. That's a topic for another day on the American election system, which I'm sure we're going to have plenty of time to talk about in 23 and 24, Michelle.
That's right. There we go. All right.
But there's a lot of issues. I think this is a season of hope, and we know where our hope lies. And that is with God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who's being born on Christmas
Absolutely.
Day. And we're being reminded that we are made for another world. We're not to bury ourselves in the issues and the problems and the text messages of this world. Our message of hope is bigger than all of these earthly issues that we put so much drama into.
We're made for greatness, and we know that. Mm-hmm. And that's why we revolt in Iran. That's mm-hmm. why we revolt in China. That's why we revolt, you know, because we know we're meant for greatness. And government, a lot of times, they don't want greatness. They just want power. And that's the difference.
Yeah, it is. And we've seen nothing else in this last couple of years is that power is very addictive to not only people, but to governments. And they hold on tight, and they don't want to let go. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can read about this time of year during Advent about humility and love. And none of those are a message that you're going to find in the public sphere these days.
No. And Herod didn't want to give up power.
Yeah.
I mean, Christ was born mm-hmm. in a situation not different than our own times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Michelle, thanks for joining the conversation today. We will take a break on Convergence, and we will regroup in early 2023 with the new season and new episodes. So we look forward to having these interesting conversations that will continue next year on Convergence. For Michelle McAloon, I'm Ellen Taylor. Have a blessed day.